There was a click and a little gasp of excitement from the wizard working on the door.
Yes, yes, left-handed using a wooden pick, that's simple.
He saw that even Susan was looking at him and coughed nervously.
I've got the fifth lock open, Mr. Te-Artime. Not a problem. They're just based on Waddley's occult sequence. Any fool could do it if they knew that.
I know it, said Tea Time, without taking his eyes off Susan.
Ah.
It was not technically audible, but nevertheless Susan could almost hear the wizard's mind backpedalling. Up ahead was the conclusion that Tea Time had no time for people he didn't need.
With interesting subtleties, he said slowly. Yes, very tricky. I'll just have to have a look at number six.
How do you know who I am? Said Susan.
Oh, easy, said
Tea Time. Twerp's Peerage. Family motto, non tomatis messor. We have to read it, you know, in class. Old Merisset calls it the guide to the turf. No one laughs except him, of course. Oh, yes, I know about you. Quite a lot. Your father was well known, went a long way very fast. As for your grandfather, honestly, that motto, is that good taste? Of course, you don't need to fear him, do you? Or do you? Susan tried to fade. It didn't work. She could feel herself staying embarrassingly solid.
I don't know what you're talking about, she said. Who are you, anyway?
I beg your pardon. My name is Te-Artime. Jonathan Te-Artime. At your service. Susan lined up the syllables in her head.
You mean, like, around 4 o'clock in the afternoon? She said.
No. I did say Te-Artime, said Tea Time. I spoke very clearly. Please don't try to break my concentration by annoying me. I only get annoyed at important things. How are you getting on, Mr. Sidney? If it's just according to Waddley's sequence, number six should be copper and blue-green light. Unless, of course, there are any subtleties.
Doing all right now, Mr. Te-Artime.
Do you think your grandfather will try to rescue you? Do you think he will? But now I have his sword, you see. I wonder... There was another click.
Sixth lock, Mr. Te-Artime.
Really?
Don't you want me to start on the seventh?
Oh, well, if you like. Pure white light will be the key, said Tea Time, still not looking away from Susan. But it may not be all important now. Thank you, anyway. You've been most helpful.
Yes. You may go.
Susan noticed that Sidney didn't even bother to pick up his books and tools, but hurried down the stairs as if he expected to be called back, and was trying to run faster than the sound.
"Is that all you're here for?" she said. "A robbery?"
He was dressed like an assassin, after all, and there was always one way to annoy an assassin.
"Like a thief?"
Tea Time danced excitedly.
"A thief? Me? I'm not a thief, madam. But if I were, I would be the kind that steals fire from the gods.
We've already got fire. There must be an upgrade by now. No, these gentlemen are thieves, common robbers. Decent types, although you wouldn't necessarily want to watch them eat, for example. That's Medium Dave, and Exhibit B is Banjo. He can talk. Medium Dave nodded at Susan. She saw the look in his eyes. Maybe there was something she could use. She'd need something. Even her hair was a mess. She couldn't step behind time. She couldn't fade into the background. And now even her hair had let her down. She was normal. Here, she was what she'd always wanted to be. Bloody, bloody damn. Sidney prayed as he ran down the stairs. He didn't believe in any gods, since most wizards seldom like to encourage them, but he prayed anyway the fervent prayers of an atheist who hopes to be wrong. But no one called him back, and no one ran after him. So, being of a serious turn of mind under his normal state of subcritical fear, he slowed down in case he lost his footing. It was then that he noticed that the steps underfoot weren't the smooth whiteness they had been everywhere else, but were very large pitted flagstones. And the light had changed. And then they weren't stairs anymore, and he staggered as he encountered flat ground where steps should have been. His outstretched hand brushed against a crumbling brick. And the ghosts of the past poured in, and he knew where he was. He was in the yard of Gamma Wimbledon's Dame School. His mother wanted him to learn his letters and be a wizard, but she also thought that long curls on a 5-year-old boy looked very smart. This was the hunting ground of Ronnie Jenks. Adult memory and understanding said that Ronnie was just an unintelligent, bullet-headed 7-year-old bully with muscles where his brain should have been. The eye of childhood, rather more accurately, dreaded him as a force like a personalised earthquake with one nostril bunged up with bogies, both knees scabbed, both fists balled, and all 5 brain cells concentrated in a kind of cerebral grunt. Oh, gods. There was the tree Ronnie used to hide behind. It looked as big and menacing as he remembered it. But if somehow he'd ended up back there, gods knew how, well, he might be a bit on the skinny side, but he was a damn sight bigger than Ronnie Jenks now. Gods, yes. He'd kick those even little trousers all the... And then, as a shadow blotted out the sun, he realised he was wearing curls. Tea Time looked thoughtfully at the door. "I suppose I should open it," he said, "after coming all this way." "You are controlling children by their teeth," said Susan. "It does sound odd, doesn't it, when you put it like that," said Tea Time, "but that's sympathetic magic for you. Is your grandfather going to try to rescue you, do you think?" "But no, I don't think he can. Not here, I think. I don't think that he can come here." "So he sent you, did he?" "Certainly not. He..." Susan stopped. "Oh, he had," she told herself, feeling even more of a fool. "He certainly had. He was learning about humans, all right. For a walking skeleton, he could be quite clever." But how clever was Tea Time? Just a bit too excited at his cleverness to realise that if death... She tried to stamp on the thought, just in case Tea Time could read it in her eyes. "I don't think he'll try," she said. "He's not as clever as you, Mr. Tea Time." "Te atime," said Tea Time automatically. "That's a shame. Do you think you're going to get away with this?" "Oh, dear. Do people really say that?" And suddenly Tea Time was much closer. "I've got away with it. No more Hogfather. And that's only the start. We'll keep the teeth coming in, of course. The possibilities." There was a rumble like an avalanche, a long way off. The dormant banjo had awakened, causing tremors in his lower slopes. His enormous hands, which had been resting on his knees, started a bunch.
"What's this?" he said.
Tea Time stopped and for a moment looked puzzled. "What's this what?"
"You said no more Hogfather," said Banjo.
He stood up like a mountain range rising gently in the squeeze between colliding continents. His hands still stayed in the vicinity of his knees. Tea Time stared at him and then glanced at Medium Dave. "He does know what we've been doing, does he?" he said. "You did tell him." Medium Dave shrugged.
"There's got to be a Hogfather," said Banjo. "There's always a Hogfather."
Susan looked down. Grey blotches were speeding across the white marble. She was standing in a pool of grey. So was Banjo. And around Tea Time, the dots bounced and recoiled like wasps around a pot of jam. "Looking for something," she thought. "You don't believe in the Hogfather, do you?" said Tea Time. "A big boy like you?"
"Yeah," said Banjo. "So what's this no more Hogfather?"
Tea Time pointed at Susan.
"She did it," he said. "She killed him."
The sheer playground effrontery of it shocked Susan.
"No, I didn't," she said. "He did, didn't, did."
Banjo's big, bald head turned towards her.
"What's this about the Hogfather?" he said.
"I don't think he's dead," said Susan, "but Tea Time has made him very ill."
"Who cares?" said Tea Time, dancing away. "When this is over, Banjo, you'll have as many presents as you want, trust me."
"There's got to be a Hogfather," Banjo rumbled, "else there's no Hog's Watch."
"It's just another solar festival," said Tea Time. "It..."
Medium Dave stood up. He had his hand on his sword.
"We're going, Tea Time," he said. "Me and Banjo are going. I don't like any of this. I don't mind robbing, I don't mind thieving, but this isn't honest. Banjo, you come with me right now."
"What's this about no more Hogfather?" said Banjo.
Tea Time pointed to Susan.
"You grab her, Banjo. It's all her fault."
Banjo lumbered a few steps in Susan's direction and then stopped.
"Our mum said no hitting girls," he rumbled. "No pulling their hair."
Tea Time rolled his one good eye. Around his feet, The greyness seemed to be boiling in the stone, following his feet as they moved. And it was around Banjo, too. Searching, Susan thought, it's looking for a way in. I think I know you, Tea Time, she said, as sweetly as she could for Banjo's sake. You're the mad kid they're all scared of, right?
Banjo, snapped Tea Time, I said, grab her.
Our mam said.
The giggling, excitable one, even the bullies never touched, because if they did, he went insane and kicked and bit, said Susan. The kid who didn't know the difference between chucking a stone at a cat and setting it on fire.
To her delight, he glared at her.
Shut up, he said.
I bet no one wanted to play with you, said Susan. Not the kid with no friends. Kids know about a mind like yours, even if they don't know the right words for it.
I said shut up. Get her, Banjo.
That was it. She could hear it in Tea Time's voice. There was a touch of vibrato that hadn't been there before. The kind of little boy, she said, watching his face, who looks up dolls' dresses.
I didn't.
Banjo looked worried.
Our mam said...
Oh, to blazes with your mam, snapped Tea Time.
There was a whisper of steel. Medium Dave drew his sword.
What did you say about our mam? He whispered.
Now he's having to concentrate on three people, Susan thought.
I bet no one ever played with you, she said. I bet there were things people had to hush up,
Banjo, you do what I tell you, Tea Time screamed. The monstrous man was beside her now. She could see his face twisted in an agony of indecision, his enormous fists clenched and unclenched, and his lips moved as some kind of horrible debate raged in his head.
Our mam said...
The grey marks flowed across the floor and formed a pool of shadow which grew darker and higher with astonishing speed. It towered over the three men and grew a shape.
Have you been a bad boy, you little perisher?
The huge woman towered over all three men. In one meaty hand it was holding a bundle of birch twigs as thick as a man's arm. The thing growled. Medium Dave looked up into the enormous face of Ma Lilywhite. Every paw was a pothole. Every brown tooth was a tombstone.
You been letting him get into trouble, our Davy? You have, ain't you?
He backed away.
No, mum, no, mum. You need a good hiding, Banjo. You been playing with the girls again?
Banjo sagged onto his knees, tears of misery rolling down his face.
Sorry, mum, sorry, sorry, mum. No, mum, sorry, sorry, mum.
Then the figure turned to Medium Dave again. The sword dropped out of his hand. His face seemed to melt. Medium Dave started to cry.
No, mum. No, mum. No, mum.
He gave a gurgle and collapsed, clutching his chest, and vanished. Tea Time started to laugh. Susan tapped him on the shoulder and, as he looked round, hit him as hard as she could across the face. That was the plan, at least. His hand moved faster and caught her wrist. It was like striking an iron bar.
Oh, no, he said. I don't think so.
Out of the corner of her eye, Susan saw Banjo crawling across the floor to where his brother had been. Ma Lilywhite had vanished.
This place gets into your head, doesn't it? Tea Time said. It pokes around to find out how to deal with you. Well, I'm in touch with my inner child.
He reached out with his other hand and grabbed her hair, pulling her head down. Susan screamed.
And it's much more fun, he whispered.
Susan felt his grip lessen. There was a wet thump, like a piece of steak hitting a slab, and Tea Time went past her on his back.
No pulling girl's hair, rumbled Banjo. That's bad.
Tea Time bounced up like an acrobat and steadied himself on the railing of the stairwell. Then he drew the sword. The blade was invisible in the bright light of the tower.
It's true what the stories say, then, he said. So thin you can't see it. I'm going to have such fun with it, he waved it at them. So light.
You wouldn't dare use it. My grandfather will come after you, said Susan, walking towards him. She saw one eye twitch.
He comes after everyone, but I'll be ready for him, said Tea Time.
He's very single-minded, said Susan, closer now.
A man after my own heart. Could be Mr. Tea Time.
He brought the sword round. She didn't even have time to duck, and she didn't even try to when he swung the sword back again.
It doesn't work here, she said,
as he stared at it in astonishment.
The blade doesn't exist here. There's no death here,
she slapped him across the face.
Hi, she said brightly. I'm the inner babysitter. She didn't punch. She just thrust out an arm, palm first, catching him under the chin and lifting him backwards over the rail. He somersaulted. She never knew how. He somehow managed to gain purchase on clear air. His free arm grabbed at hers, her feet came off the ground, and she was over the rail. She caught it with her other hand, although later she wondered if the rail hadn't managed to catch her instead. Tea Time swung from her arm, staring upwards with a thoughtful expression. She saw him grip the sword hilt in his teeth and reach down to his belt. The question, "Is this person mad enough to try to kill someone holding him?" was asked and answered very, very fast. She kicked down and hit him on the ear. The cloth of her sleeve began to tear. Tea Time tried to get another grip. She kicked again and the dress ripped. For an instant he held on to nothing, and then, still wearing the expression of someone trying to solve a complex problem, he fell away, spinning, getting smaller. He hit the pile of teeth, sending them splashing across the marble. He jerked for a moment and vanished. A hand, like a bunch of bananas, pulled Susan back over the rail.
"You can get into trouble hitting girls," said Banjo. "No playing with girls."
There was a click behind him. The doors had swung open. Cold white mist rolled out across the floor.
"Our ma'am," said Banjo, trying to work things out. "Our ma'am was here."
"Yes," said Susan.
"But it weren't our ma'am, 'cause they buried our ma'am."
"Yes."
"We watched them fill in the grave and everything."
"Yes," said Susan, and added to herself, "I bet you did."
"And where's our Davy gone?"
Somewhere else, Banjo."
"Somewhere nice," said the huge man, hesitantly.
Susan grasped with relief the opportunity to tell the truth, or at least not definitely lie.
"It could be," she said. "Better than here."
"You never know. Some people would say the odds are in favour." Banjo turned his pink piggy eyes on her. For a moment, a 35-year-old man looked out through the pink clouds of a 5-year-old face.
"That's good," he said. "He'll be able to see our mam again."
This much conversation seemed to exhaust him. He sagged.
"I want to go home," he said.
She stared at his big, stained face, shrugged hopelessly, pulled a handkerchief out of her pocket and held it up to his mouth. "Spit," she commanded. He obeyed. She dabbed the handkerchief over the worst parts and then tucked it into his hand. "Have a good blow," she suggested, and then carefully leaned out of range until the echoes of the blast had died away. "You can keep the hanky." "Please," she added, meaning it wholeheartedly. "Now, tuck your shirt in."
"Yes, miss."
"Now, go downstairs and sweep all the teeth out of the circle. Can you do that?" Banjo nodded. "What can you do?" Susan prompted. Banjo concentrated.
"Sweep all the teeth out of the circle, miss."
"Good.
Off you go."
Susan watched him plod off and then looked at the white doorway. She was sure the wizard had only got as far as the 6th lock. The room beyond the door was entirely white, and the mist that swirled at knee level deadened even the sound of her footsteps. All there was a bed. It was a large 4-poster, old and dusty. She thought it was unoccupied, and then she saw the figure, lying among the mounds of pillows. It looked very much like a frail old lady in a mob cap. The old woman turned her head and smiled at Susan.
"Hello, my dear."
Susan couldn't remember a grandmother. Her father's mother had died when she was young, and the other side of the family, well, she'd never had a grandmother. But this was the sort she would have wanted. The kind, the nasty realistic side of her mind said, that hardly ever existed. Susan thought she heard a child laugh, and another one. Somewhere, almost out of hearing, children were at play. It was always a pleasant lulling sound, always provided, of course, you couldn't hear the actual words. "No," said Susan.
"Sorry, dear,"
said the old lady. "You're not the tooth fairy." "Oh, no. There was even a damn patchwork quilt."
"Oh, I am, dear."
"Oh, Grandma, what big teeth you have. Good grief, you've even got a shawl. Oh, dear."
"I don't understand, lovey."
"You forgot the rocking chair," said Susan. "I always thought there'd be a rocking chair." There was a pop behind her and then a dying creak. She didn't even turn round. "If you've included a kitten playing with a ball of wool, it'll go very hard with you," she said sternly, and picked up the candlestick by the bed. It seemed heavy enough. "I don't think you're real," she said levelly. There's not a little old woman in a shawl running this place. You are out of my head. That's how you defend yourself. You poke around in people's heads and find the things that work. She swung the candlestick. It passed through the figure in the bed. See, she said, you're not even real.
Oh, I am real, dear, said the old woman, as her outline changed. The candlestick wasn't.
Susan looked down at the new shape. Nope, she said. It's horrible, but it doesn't frighten me. No, nor does that. It changed again and again. No, nor does my father. Good grief, you're scraping the bottom of the barrel, aren't you? I like spiders. Snakes don't worry me. Dogs? No. Rats are fine. I like rats. Sorry, is anyone frightened of that? She grabbed at the thing, and this time the shape stayed. It looked like a small, wizened monkey, but with deep, big eyes under a brow overhanging like a balcony. Its hair was grey and lank. It struggled weakly in her grasp and wheezed. I don't frighten easily, said Susan, but you'd be amazed at how angry I can become. The creature hung limp. It muttered. She let it down again.
You're a bogeyman, aren't you? She said.
It collapsed in a heap when she took her hand away.
Not a V, it said.
What do you mean, the? Said Susan.
The bogeyman, said the bogeyman,
and she saw how rangy it was, how white and grey streaked its hair, how the skin was stretched over the bones. The first bogeyman.
I do remember when the land was different. Ice, many times of ice. And the, what do you call them?
The creature wheezed.
The lands, the big lands, all different.
Susan sat down on the bed. You mean continents?
All different.
The black sunken eyes glinted at her, and suddenly the thing reared up, bony arms waving.
I was the dark in the cave. I was the shadow in the trees. You've heard about the primal scream, That was at me. I was...
It folded up and started coughing.
And then, that thing, you know, that thing, all light and bright, lightning you could carry, hot little sunshine, and then there was no more dark, just shadows, and then you made axes in the forest, and then...
Susan sat down on the bed. There's still plenty of bogeymen, she said.
Hiding under the beds, lurking in the cupboards, but...
It fought for breath.
If you had seen me in the old days, when they came down into the deep caves to draw their hunting pictures, I could roar in their heads so that their stomachs dropped out of their bottoms.
All the old skills are dying out, said Susan gravely.
Oh, others came later. They never knew that first fine terror. All they knew...
Even whispering, the bogeyman managed to get a sneer in its voice.
Was dark corners. I had been the dark. I was the first. And now I was no better than them. Frightening maids, curdling cream, hiding in shadows at the stub of the year. And then one night I thought, why?
Susan nodded. Bogeymen weren't bright. The moment of existential uncertainty probably took a lot longer in heads where the brain cells bounced so very slowly from one side of the skull to the other. But Grandad had thought like that. You hung around with humans long enough and you stopped being what they imagined you to be and wanted to become something of your own. Umbrellas and silver hairbrushes. You thought, what was the point of it all? She said.
Frightening children, lurking. And then I started to watch them. Didn't really used to be children back in the ice times, just big humans, little humans, not children. And there was a different world in their heads. In their heads. That's where the old days were now. The old days, when it was all young.
You came out from under the bed?
I watched over them, kept them safe.
Susan tried not to shudder. And the teeth?
Oh, you can't leave teeth around. Anyone might get them, do terrible things. I liked them. I didn't want anyone to hurt them.
It bubbled.
I never wanted to hurt them. I just used to watch. I kept the teeth all safe and sometimes I just sit here listening to them.
It mumbled on. Susan listened in embarrassed amazement, not knowing whether to take pity on the thing or, and this was a developing option, to tread on it.
And the teeth, they remember.
It started to shake. The money? Susan prompted. I don't see many rich bogeymen around.
Money everywhere, buried in holes, old treasure, back of sofas. It adds up. Investments. Money for the tooth, very important part of the magic, makes it safe, makes it proper, otherwise it's thieving. And I labelled them all and kept them safe and then I was old. But I found people.
The tooth fairy sniggered, and for a moment Susan felt sorry for the men in the ancient caves.
They don't ask questions, do they?
It bubbled.
You give 'em money and they all do their jobs and they don't ask questions.
It's more than their job's worth, said Susan.
And then they came stealing.
Susan gave in. Old gods do new jobs. You look terrible.
Thank you very much.
I mean ill.
Very old. All those men. Too much effort.
The bogeyman groaned.
You don't die here, it panted. Just get old, listening to the laughter.
Susan nodded. It was in the air. She couldn't hear words, just a distant chatter, as if it was at the other end of a long corridor.
And this place, it grew up round me.
The trees, said Susan, and the sky, out of their heads.
Dying, the little children, you've got...
The figure faded. Susan sat for a while, listening to the distant chatter. Worlds of belief, she thought, just like oysters. A little piece of shit gets in and then a pearl grows up around it. She got up and went downstairs. Banjo had found a broom and mop somewhere. The circle was empty, and with surprising initiative, the man was carefully washing the chalk away. Banjo?
Yes, miss?
You like it here?
There's trees, miss.
That probably counts as a yes, Susan decided. The sky doesn't worry you? He looked at her in puzzlement.
No, miss.
Can you count, Banjo? He looked smug.
Yes, miss. On my fingers, miss.
So you can count up to... Susan prompted.
13, miss,
said Banjo proudly. She looked at his big hands. Good grief. Well, she thought, and why not? He's big and trustworthy, and what other kind of life has he got? I think it would be a good idea if you did the tooth fairy's job, Banjo.
Will that be all right, miss? Won't the tooth fairy mind?
You do it until she comes back.
All right, miss.
I'll get people to keep an eye on you until you get settled in. I think food comes in on the cart. You're not to let people cheat you. She looked at his hands and then up and up at the lower slopes until she saw the peak of Mount Banjo and added, "Not that I think they'll try, mind you."
"Yes, miss. I will keep things tidy, miss.
The big pink face looked at her. "Yes, Banjo?"
"Can I have a puppy, miss? I had a kitten once, miss, but our mam drowned it 'cause it was dirty."
Susan's memory threw up a name. "A puppy called Spot?"
"Yes, miss. Spot, miss."
"I think it'll turn up quite soon, Banjo." He seemed to take this entirely on trust.
"Thank you, miss."
"And now I've got to go."
"Right, miss."
She looked back up the tower. Death's Land might be dark, but when you were there, you never thought anything bad was going to happen to you. You were beyond the places where it could. But here... When you were grown up, you only feared, well, logical things. Poverty, illness, being found out. At least you weren't mad with terror because of something under the stairs. The world wasn't full of arbitrary light and shade. The wonderful world of childhood? Well, it wasn't a cut-down version of the adult one, that was certain. It was more like the adult one written in big, heavy letters. Everything was more. More everything. She left Banjo to his sweeping and stepped out into the perpetually sunlit world. Bilious and Violet hurried towards her. Bilious was waving a branch like a club. "You don't need that," said Susan. She wanted some sleep.
"We talked about it and we thought we ought to come back and help," said Bilious.
"Ah, democratic courage," said Susan. "Well, they're all gone, to wherever they go." Bilious lowered the branch thankfully.
"It wasn't that..."
he began. "Look, you two can make yourselves useful," said Susan. "There's a mess in there. Go and help Banjo."
"Banjo?"
"He's more or less running the place now." Violet laughed. "But he's..." "He's in charge," said Susan wearily.
"All right," said Bilious. "Anyway, I'm sure we can tell him what to do."
"No. Too many people have told him what to do. He knows what to do. Just help him get started, all right? But if the Hogfather comes back now, you'll vanish, won't you?" She didn't know how to phrase the question.
"I'm giving up my old job," said Bilious. "I'm going to go on working as a holiday relief for the other gods."
He gave her a pleading look.
"Really?"
Susan looked at Violet. "Oh, well, maybe if she believes in him at least, it might work. You never know." "Good," she said. "Have fun. Now I'm going home. This is a hell of a way to spend Hogswatch." She found Binky waiting by the stream.